observations of the island and final preparations. Amongst the herbage, I saw nothing resembling that of the Auckland Isles, except for some tufty grass. The feathered tribes were also dissimilar, with the exception of one familiar little chirper, the robin. Neither did I encounter any of the boggy earth so common on the Auckland Isles, and the rocky formations here are entirely different. On returning to the vessel in the evening, I found the crew as busily employed as I had left them, putting everything in order for a sea voyage. The vessel is nearly new, and has hitherto been used exclusively for coastal trade. Wednesday, August 2nd, 1865. The S.W. gale continues, bringing bitter squalls and showers of hail. It is fortunate we are anchored in a safe harbor during this weather, as the little vessel would have taken a severe thrashing at sea, with the wind blowing directly against us. Everything aboard is snug and ready for our journey. I remain anxious to depart, but I must endure this wait patiently until the wind favors us. My health has improved significantly. I have nearly forgotten my recent indisposition. Thursday, August 3rd, 1865. The gale persists, but the showers have subsided and the weather is slightly finer. I spent the day wandering about the woods, eventually reaching a point where I could see the sea, which remains very rough. I discovered an herb growing here, similar to one found at the Auckland Islands. The Maoris occasionally substitute it for tea in times of need, but I find it makes such insipid stuff that I would prefer pure water. Captain Cross continues to entertain me at his house, which stands alone on a hill, overlooking the village. Mrs. Cross, a half-caste Maori, fascinates me. She speaks only Maori, while Captain Cross speaks English. Oddly, they appear to understand each other perfectly, despite neither speaking the other's language fluently. Their children converse fluently in both languages, but prefer to speak Maori. Mrs. Cross is young, as fair as a European, and extremely reserved, rarely engaging in conversation. Today, we received a visit from the village magistrate, an elderly Maori. Out of deference to us, he refused to sit at the table until we had finished dining. This cultural tradition, where guests are afforded such respect, seems both curious and admirable. Friday, August 4th, 1865. The wind remains southerly, but has moderated slightly, though it is still brisk and showery. I visited the coastline to observe the sea, which remains high and turbulent. The barometer is rising, but I suspect the weather will not improve significantly until the full moon on the 6th. Saturday, August 5th, 1865. The wind persists in its direction, but has weakened. It remains squally, with occasional showers. I visited the village burying ground today, situated on a lonely, tree-covered point jutting into the bay. It is far from the nearest dwellings, a precaution influenced by superstitious beliefs. The locals are deeply afraid of the spirits of their departed loved ones paying them visits, a superstition I knew of, but had not fully understood until now. I remain hopeful that tomorrow's full moon will bring the favorable wind we so desperately need. The barometer is steady, above 30 inches. Sunday, August 6th, 1865. The morning dawned calm and clear, with every sign of a northerly wind. By 2 p.m., the first light breaths of wind arrived, and we made a start. As we cleared the port, the wind seemed to freshen, shifting slightly eastward. However, by 7 p.m., it backed to NW, and then to SW. Very light. By midnight, the weather had turned dark and gloomy, with clouds building from the southward. I now fear that the wind will settle from this direction. Despite this, the barometer remains high, offering a small hope that the wind will stay light. We are currently beating down along the land between Port Adventure and Port Pegasus. If the wind persists from the south, we shall seek shelter in Port Pegasus. Monday, August 7th, 1865. At 4 a.m., the breeze freshened. The sky remained dark and gloomy, but the wind began to back westward, encouraging us to proceed onward. By 8 a.m., we were 14 miles south of South Cape. At noon, the weather turned thick and foggy. The wind grew strong, and the sea became increasingly rough. The little vessel danced about like a cork, making it impossible to sit, stand, or lie without holding on. By 4 p.m., the weather became threatening, with the wind strengthening and hauling to the southwest, dead against us. Given the conditions, it would have been imprudent to beat against it, so we bore up for Port Pegasus, running at 10 knots with a following wind. We had been within 10 miles of the Snares Islands, but the weather was too thick to see them. Tuesday, August 8th, 1865. As we approached Port Pegasus, the wind moderated slightly, and the weather cleared enough for us to see. By 3 a.m., we hove to, waiting for daylight, as we had not yet made land. I began to feel uneasy. With only one compass aboard, likely faulty, we could easily be off course. Where we were, or which side of the island we lay, was impossible to determine without the morning sun. At daylight, no land was in sight. The weather remained hazy, so we continued lying to until 8 a.m. At this point, I attempted to calculate our position based on poor sun sightings and an assumed latitude. By my estimation, we were 60 to 70 miles east of South Cape, a difficult situation caused by the faulty compass, which had led us astray. Wednesday, August 9th, 1865. By 4:30 p.m., we sighted East Cape of Stewart Island, some 25 miles distant. We began beating toward it under double reef sails. By 2 a.m., we successfully anchored once again in Port Adventure, thankful for safe shelter after such a harrowing experience. Captain Cross hopes to procure a new compass at Patterson's Inlet, about 12 miles from here. If unsuccessful, we must return to Invercargill. The delay is disheartening, and I feel thoroughly sick of this prolonged journey. A question weighs on my mind. Am I doing my family an injustice by pursuing this mission further? Thursday, August 10th, 1865. The gale continues unabated, blowing fiercely from the SSW. The sea remains heavy, and large swells roll into the harbor's beaches. The weather shows no signs of improvement, though the barometer remains high, higher than I ever saw during similar gales on the Auckland Islands. I must reconcile myself to further delays. A visit and an unusual escort. We had the honor of a visit again today from the magistrate, whom I have mentioned before, along with his daughter. They were followed by quite the entourage, a train of three dogs, one cat, a large flock of poultry, and a pig. No doubt, this motley crew was meant to escort the young lady, as they had not accompanied His Honor on his previous visit. Captain Cross was less impressed by the animals invading his garden. Grabbing a stick, he laid about them lustily. Chaos erupted. The fowls squawked and took flight. The dogs howled and leapt over fences. The pig squealed and ran in every direction looking for an escape, and the cat disappeared like a shadow. The old magistrate laughed heartily at the spectacle, but his daughter was far less amused. A frown appeared on her face, and what a frown it was! Her broad, thick lips, which seemed to have a natural antipathy to each other, rose and fell, one nearly touching her nose, the other covering her chin. Her eyebrows dropped, the hair on her low forehead seemed to chase them, and her nostrils flared so wide that her flat nose nearly covered the width of her face. She did not say a word. Friday, August 11th. The wind continues to blow a very heavy gale. Since noon, it has been SW, accompanied by thunder and lightning. Rain is falling in torrents, and there is no possibility of moving in weather like this. The Maoris here say the wind will continue throughout this moon. I wish there were some way to send letters across to Invercargill, but it seems the Flying Scud will be the first vessel to make the crossing upon our return. Saturday, August 12th. Early this morning, we set off for Patterson's Inlet and anchored at the neck of the peninsula at 2 p.m. We left Port Adventure with a strong SW wind, squally and showery. Upon reaching the East Cape, the wind shifted to WNW, and by the time we reached the inlet, It was blowing Nawabu. We made slow progress, beating up with double-reefed courses. A Mr. Lowry kindly furnished us with a compass, which was the main object of our visit. While there, I had the honor of meeting Toby, the Maori chief of Ruapuke and Stewart Islands. Toby, a distinguished and intelligent-looking man of about 40, generously offered us the use of the compass from his boat. It appeared to be better than the two we already had, so I accepted his offer. Toby also informed me of a snug cove on the eastern side of the Snares Islands, where a boat or small vessel may lay perfectly sheltered from all winds. This was new to me. When the Snares were surveyed by HMS Pandora, no landing was attempted. If Toby's information proves correct, the cove might offer a valuable refuge in case of necessity, saving us from retreating to Stewart Island. Mr. Lowry, one of the oldest European settlers here, predicts a favorable wind by Monday or Tuesday, but advises us to wait until it comes around by south and east. Northerly or NW winds here, he says, cannot be trusted for an hour. At 3 p.m., we weighed anchor and returned to Port Adventure. Calm weather met us as we approached the port, and we had to row with sweeps to reach the anchorage by 8:30 p.m. Tomorrow, weather permitting, we will proceed to Port Pegasus, where we intend to wait for a good wind. Sunday, August 13th. At daybreak, a strong breeze sprang up from west-southwest, quickly increasing to a gale. By noon, the wind was at its height, and we let go a second anchor. The bay was a continuous sheet of white foam throughout the afternoon. Since nightfall, the storm has grown worse, with thunder and lightning crashing alongside frequent showers. The New Zealand Coast Pilot says, thunder and lightning during a gale indicate its long continuance, which leaves us wondering how much longer this will persist. Monday, August 14th. From 10 p.m. last night until 1 a.m., the thunderstorm was incessant, with peal upon peal shaking the earth, accompanied by torrential rain. It was the heaviest storm I can remember, rivaling even those I experienced in Australia. Afterward, the wind died away, but by morning it returned from the south, bringing sleet and snow. By evening, the ground was completely white. The Auckland Islands will undoubtedly face even more severe conditions. I can only hope the two men we left there will come to no harm. Tuesday, August 15th. The wind has remained SSW for most of the day, squally and accompanied by snow. The cutter's deck was covered in snow about 2 inches thick this morning. The wind has now fallen light, and while clouds still roll in from the south, they are moving more slowly. A cutter named the Ellen sailed today. The captain hoped to reach Invercargill, but was unsure. I sent a letter via him to Mr. McPherson. Sadly, I could not send others, given the uncertainty of his voyage. Wednesday, August 16th. A moderate southerly wind brought occasional showers of hail and drizzling rain. The snow has mostly melted, and the weather is slightly milder. We considered setting out for Port Pegasus today, but as it might take over 24 hours to beat there, we decided we are better off waiting where we are. The Maori's prediction of no change during this moon may yet prove accurate. Thursday, August 17th. It has rained all day. The wind has been light and fickle, shifting between south and west. The barometer is rising, and I hold out hope for a favorable change. Friday, August 18th. Light southerly airs continued throughout the day, accompanied by dark, gloomy weather and frequent misty showers. My spirits are low. With nothing left to read or occupy my mind, I spend my time obsessively watching for even the slightest change in the weather. This afternoon, we rowed to Oyster Cove, where we gathered 30 dozen oysters. The barometer still indicates a coming change. I pray we may set sail tomorrow. Saturday, August 19th. The day began calm and cloudy. By 11 a.m., signs of a northeasterly wind appeared. We picked up anchor and rowed toward the heads. A light ESE breeze allowed us to beat out of the harbor. By 8 p.m., the wind died entirely, but with the tide in our favor, we rowed into Port Pegasus at 11:45 p.m. It is now 1 a.m., and I am heading to bed. Sunday, August 20th. A calm day with heavy clouds. In the morning, I adjusted the compasses. One appears reliable, showing little deviation, while the other two are significantly off. I trust we can now proceed with confidence. We spent the day fishing and exploring. A dog accompanying us caught a penguin, and we pulled in 3 dozen beautiful trumpeter fish. He appeared so overwhelmed that these were the only words he could utter. With the excitement of the reunion behind us, I urged the men. Friday, August 25th, 1865, at midnight last night, it fell calm, and about an hour before the break of day, we up anchor and pulled the cutter up to Epigwate. This is the name we gave to the place where our house stands and where the Grafton was wrecked. It is an Indian word and means a home by the wave or a dwelling by the water. In naming it, we all chose a name, wrote it on a slip of paper, folded them all up alike, placed them in a bag, and shook them up. Then one man put in his hand and drew out a slip which was to have on it the name that we were to give to the place. Epigwate, which was mine, came out. We were about 4 hours in getting up there. My boys picked up what things they wanted, and Captain Cross also took anything that he could pick up that might be of service to him. We started off again from the cove, where we anchored about 5 p.m. We had a light air from the westward to come down with. I furnished my boys with pipes and tobacco and gave them the clothing sent down for them, with which they were highly delighted. Like myself, I think they can appreciate the kindness of those who sent them. However, on opening the parcels, I found there were no shirts. As I know I ordered 2 Crimeans, I am sorry they omitted sending them, for the boys are very much in need of them. I have now got one great burden off my mind, but a gigantic source of uneasiness yet remains, my wife and family. God grant that it may be speedily removed, and that I may soon enjoy their society again, and once more breathe the air of civilization from which I have now so long been exiled. The men had constructed a raft with 4 empty casks, and came down and taken away everything that we had left, including an oar which they substituted for the one that I found yesterday. They left the mast since it was calm and of no use, and the half-seal they could not carry, as they happened to have a good stock of food at home at the time. Barometer, 29.50 Saturday, August 26, 1865, light northerly and NE airs all this day. Captain Cross is very desirous of having a knockdown amongst the seals. He and my men have been pulling round in the boat today, and the dog killed 2 young ones, but they did not fall in with any more. The other day, when we got the 2 on Masked Island, I had shot the young one, as I wanted to make sure of him to give them a taste of young meat. After I fired, Cross saw the old cow running toward him and at once bolted down a cliff and made for the boat. The cow, however, turned in another direction, and the other man and I followed and killed her. Cross, not seeing the seal follow him, took courage and went up the hill again. Seeing the young seal lying there, he thought it was asleep. He set on him with his club and cried out in a joyous tone of excitement, "Where are you, boys? I've killed a seal." "Are you sure you've killed him?" I said. "Killed him, yes," he replied. "His brains are coming out of his mouth." On looking at him, I saw the calf had been vomiting milk. I showed him the hole where the ball had gone through its head. He was quite crestfallen. "Well," he said, "I thought I'd killed a seal." Sunday, August 27th. Light northeast, airs, and moderate pleasant weather. This is an extraordinary spell of fine weather. It is very seldom that we have 3 fine days together down here. This morning, we went for a pull in the boat up the western arm. We killed 3 young seals. Cross and one of his men fell in with an old cow, but she escaped from them and got into the water. They had the dog with them too, who fastened boldly to the seal, but only came off second best, with part of one of his ears torn entirely off. He is a large, noble dog. Such a one would have been of the greatest service to us while we were down here. He held fast to the seal until she dragged him into the water, and would not have let go, then had one of the men not hit him on the head with his club, instead of the seal. I was some distance from the scene of action, but it seems they were afraid to go near the seal, or they might have easily killed it. We went to the very head of the western arm. I had never been so far up before. And I find there is a good ship entrance on the west side of Monumental Isle, not less than 300 yards wide. The sea does not roll so heavily through it as through the east one, which I have before recommended. Strong tides rush through them, and neither should be attempted by a stranger without first sending in a boat. I have no hesitation in saying they are both safe, and good anchorage may be had immediately after entering by hauling into the northeast basin and shutting in the entrance or running half a mile up. Friday, August 25th, 1865. At midnight last night, it fell calm, and about an hour before the break of day, we up anchor and pulled the cutter up to Epigwate. This is the name we gave to the place where our house stands and where the Grafton was wrecked. It is an Indian word and means a home by the wave or a dwelling by the water. In naming it, we all chose a name, wrote it on a slip of paper, folded them all up alike, placed them in a bag, and shook them up. Then, one man put in his hand and drew out a slip, which was to have on it the name that we were to give to the place. Epigwate, which was mine, came out. We were about 4 hours in getting up there. My boys picked up what things they wanted, and Captain Cross also took anything that he could pick up that might be of service to him. We started off again from the cove, where we anchored about 5 p.m. We had a light air from the westward to come down with. I furnished my boys with pipes and tobacco, and gave them the clothing sent down for them, with which they were highly delighted. Like myself, I think they can appreciate the kindness of those who sent them. However, on opening the parcels, I found there were no shirts. As I know I ordered 2 Crimeans, I am sorry they omitted sending them, for the boys are very much in need of them. I have now got 1 great burden off my mind, but a gigantic source of uneasiness yet remains: my wife and family. God grant that it may be speedily removed, and that I may soon enjoy their society again, and once more breathe the air of civilization from which I have now so long been exiled. The men had constructed a raft with 4 empty casks, and came down and taken away everything that we had left, including an oar which they substituted for the one that I found yesterday. They left the mast, since it was calm and of no use, and the half-seal they could not carry, as they happened to have a good stock of food at home at the time. Barometer, 29.50. Saturday, August 26, 1865. Light northerly and N.E. airs all this day. Captain Cross is very desirous of having a knockdown amongst the seals. He and my men have been pulling round in the boat today, and the dog killed 2 young ones, but they did not fall in with any more. The other day, when we got the 2 on Masked Island, I had shot the young one, as I wanted to make sure of him to give them a taste of young meat. After I fired, Cross saw the old cow running toward him and at once bolted down a cliff and made for the boat. The cow, however, turned in another direction, and the other man and I followed and killed her. Cross, not seeing the seal follow him, took courage and went up the hill again. Seeing the young seal lying there, he thought it was asleep. He set on him with his club and cried out in a joyous tone of excitement, "Where are you, boys? I've killed a seal." "Are you sure you've killed him?" I said. "Killed him, yes," he replied. "His brains are coming out of his mouth." On looking at him, I saw the calf had been vomiting milk. I showed him the hole where the ball had gone through its head. He was quite crestfallen. "Well," he said, "I thought I'd killed a seal." Sunday, August 27th. Light northeast airs and moderate pleasant weather. This is an extraordinary spell of fine weather. It is very seldom that we have 3 fine days together down here. This morning we went for a pull in the boat up the western arm. We killed 3 young seals. Cross and one of his men fell in with an old cow, but she escaped from them and got into the water. They had the dog with them too, who fastened boldly to the seal but only came off second best, with part of one of his ears torn entirely off. He is a large, noble dog. Such a one would have been of the greatest service to us while we were down here. He held fast to the seal until she dragged him into the water and would not have let go, then had one of the men not hit him on the head with his club instead of the seal. I was some distance from the scene of action, but it seems they were afraid to go near the seal, or they might have easily killed it. We went to the very head of the western arm. I had never been so far up before, and I find there is a good ship entrance on the west side of Monumental Isle, not less than 300 yards wide. The sea does not roll so heavily through it as through the east one, which I have before recommended. Strong tides rush through them, and neither should be attempted by a stranger without first sending in a boat. I have no hesitation in saying they are both safe, and good anchorage may be had immediately after entering by hauling into the northeast basin and shutting in the entrance or running half a mile up. Wednesday, September 6th. Since midnight last night we have had a very hard gale, and until 8 o'clock this evening we managed to carry close reefs. But since that time we are lying to under the balance reefed mainsail and a small jib. There is a very dangerous sea running, but the vessel seems to ride very comfortably, much better than I would have expected her to do. Still, a sea falls on board now and then, and the water is finding its way to almost every part of her, but she is not making any water in her bottom. The wind is at WNW and inclined to back to the northward. I fear that the heaviest of the gale is yet to come. Since noon it has rained heavily with gloomy, dark weather, and it is very cold. Thermometer, 42 to 37. Thursday, September 7th, 1865. Hard gale and high dangerous sea. The little vessel is being knocked about unmercifully. Heavy rain. No place to lie down. Blankets and every stitch of clothing wringing wet. Can't get anything cooked, not even a cup of tea. Second edition of our trip in the boat. Misery. 4 p.m. Blowing a hurricane. Sea frightful, vessel laboring and straining immensely. If not very strong, she cannot stand this long. Consider her in a highly dangerous situation, just taken in mainsail and jib and set a small boat sail, under which she feels somewhat easier. But if one of the high seas that are coming around her in every direction falls on board, she is gone. It would knock her into 10,000 pieces. Frightful. Midnight. At 6 p.m., the gale began to moderate, and fortunately, the sea quickly followed suit. We set the mainsail, but carried away the traveler and tore the sail. 8 p.m. The wind came from the SW and continues very light, but sufficient to keep her steady while the sea is rapidly running down. I hope soon to be able to make her stretch her legs again. She has weathered this storm bravely and without sustaining any visible damage about the hull. Surprising what these little vessels will stand, but she is an amazingly good sea boat, rides like a seagull, and holds her ground well. Bravo, Flying Scud. Friday, September 8th, noon. Strong and increasing breeze. Double reefs in. We have just made the Snares Islands, bearing WNW, distant about 15 miles. The Flying Scud is again bounding merrily off before the wind. She is now going through the water at the rate of 11 knots, which I think is the height of her speed. If the wind will only stand just as it is at present, we shall be up to Pakiwia, Stewart Island, before dark. 5 p.m. Sorry to say that at 3 o'clock the wind, which previously was inclined to back to the westward, went into SE, and now blows very hard. At 3:30 we made Stewart Island, South Cape bearing north. We are carrying all the canvas that the poor little craft will bear, and the sea is now and then making a clean breach over her. We want to make Port Pegasus to anchor there if possible, but I fear we will not manage it. for the ebb tide is setting her to the westward, and the wind is hauling to the eastward, with every appearance of an easterly gale. 8 p.m. Stiff gale, ENE, and an ugly, confused sea. South Cape bearing northwest about 6 miles. I fear much that she will not do it. We shall have to run to leeward of the Cape. Saturday, September 9th. We thrashed her at it all last night, endeavoring to get up to Port Pegasus. Sometimes 2 and sometimes 3 reefs in, the little craft got a severe drubbing and would, with another hour or two's perseverance, have got in. But at 8 a.m., when within a mile and a half of the entrance, the gale freshened and hauled to NE. This was thoroughly disheartening, and considering the severe weather and misery we have had to contend with, and going without sleep, I have had the smallest share of hardship, and I can safely say I have not slept half an hour since we left the Auckland's. It is no wonder that we gave it up. We ran round the Cape and made for Port Easy, where we anchored at 11:15 this morning. Port Easy is 10 miles to the northward of the South Cape, and by passing between the islands and the shore, and keeping the shore close on board, within 3/4 of a mile, you are bound to sail right into the port. I must pronounce it the snuggest and easiest of access that ever I have entered in the southern hemisphere. There is room for 50 ships of any size to swing to their anchors, well sheltered from all winds, and a convenient depth of water, 3 to 4 fathoms. Immediately after anchoring, Captain Cross and I took the boat, bundled all our clothes and bedclothes into her, and went on shore, where we lit a fire that would roast 6 bullocks, and hung our clothes around it to dry. We then went on board, got dinner, and came on shore again, bringing with us a saucepan for heating water in and a tub for washing in. Since performing our ablutions from top to toe, we feel like new men. We are now, as I have said, comfortably smoking our tobacco, quite regardless of the any gale which is now howling outside. Our clothes are getting dry nicely, and I have no doubt we shall sleep without rocking tonight, since we could not sleep with it.